Hi, it's Quinn, and you're listening to Not So Bloody Mary, the show about women in history with negative reputations. Enjoy the show!
Okay. Hi, Grace.
Hey, Quinn!
Hi, listeners that we have not spoken to in 3 months.
Sorry, is that's it my 3 months?
I actually can't do math, but I will have to in 2 weeks.
This is
unfortunately
true.
But whatever. Hi everybody, welcome to the final part of Catherine Howard. If you can't tell, it will not be a fun time.
No,
I'm giving you this disclaimer now. There will be talk of beheading, but I'm trying to keep it light, because when we did Anne Boleyn, I cried, and I don't really want to cry again.
I feel like there's just a general trigger warning for beheading on all of these.
Yeah, general trigger warning for beheading, guys. And for our next person, there will also be a general trigger warning for beheading. Don't we just love life?
We're just all getting beheaded.
That's kind of the vibe that we're going with. It's like my beheaded dreams.
Oh my god.
No one here knows about those, except for you. But
have
fun
you had
fact,
more?
Guys. No, I've only ever had 3, I think. Oh, fun fact, guys. 3 times in my life in the last 2 years, I have dreamt that I was beheaded.
What a fun time.
I think that's a sign that at those times I was far too deep into the Tudors and was watching it every single night.
This is true.
But only watching Natalie Dormer, and that's about it. I did not pay attention to anything else. It's kind of boring.
I mean, like, why would you?
Fair. We still have to finish the Tudors, and now we have to finish Dickinson.
Oh my god.
We've got too much to do. Too little time.
Too much to do, too little time.
That's the thought.
Shoot, what day is it?
It is January 22nd.
That's wonderful. I have an assignment due tomorrow.
Our friend Esme turns 17 tomorrow.
Does she?
Shout out, Esme. Love you, Esme. Don't like the fact that you're 17, because we met when we were 8, but there's her exposed. I don't think she listens, but if she does, happy birthday.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday to anybody else.
I saw you the other day at my place of work.
Yeah. Our Aquarius friends.
Yes.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to our friend Henry, who we talk about ad nauseum on this podcast, because we always feel bad when we trash Henry the 8th, but... happy birthday to our January friends. Have a great month, birthday month, even though it's mostly over.
Aquarii.
Yeah, we hope that everybody is doing well, because it has been a long few months for many reasons. And we hope that you're all staying safe.
Yes.
Or as safe as you can be. Not us getting thrown into a COVID-infested school. Woo! 2 separate schools, actually, guys. We're not in the same school, unfortunately, or else I would have friends. I just killed Grace, everybody.
Anyway, who knows who else didn't have friends?
You. Then you found them. Catherine Howard had friends.
I was gonna say Catherine Howard.
Well, she didn't have friends when she died, because they all abandoned her. It was an Anne Boleyn situation. So, where we left Catherine, she was getting arrested, basically. very fun. So, we're in November 1541, everybody. Way back. Way, 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 way back. But not actually that far back, because I'm not even going to reach the 1500s in my world history course this year. Yay!
Yay!
Anyways, so right now our girl is living in the Queen's apartments at Hampton Court Palace. Material girl.
Material girl.
But she's about to be a not material girl, because on Monday the 14th of November, Catherine is escorted out of the Queen's apartments. And as soon as she leaves, they strip the rooms bare because Henry is preparing for his next queen. That's not true. He's actually sad this time.
Is he?
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. But Sir Thomas Seymour, because of course there's a Seymour in this story. Why would there not be? arrives to take inventory of her jewelry collection. So let's talk about how she was a material girl. Listen to all this stuff that she had that I don't have. She had a sable muff that she left behind on its ruby and gold chain. She had pearls that they counted to their hundreds. She had scenes from the life of Noah, I'm assuming the Ark Man, that were made out of diamonds. Why? I don't know. She had golden girdles. She had crucifixes that were bejeweled and then all their sister pieces. And that's just, you know, that's just what they wrote down in this book. She had a lot more than that. She had a lot of clothes. She had a lot of jewelry. And I'm going to assume she probably had a lot of shoes. Good job, Catherine. But no, now she's walking into three sparsely furnished rooms in an abandoned monastery. Wow. Not exactly what she's used to at the moment. On the council's orders, her cloth of estate that like shows that she's a queen is not put on her chair, which it usually is, to be like, hey, look, she's fancy, you're not. And she's not given any access to her wardrobe, which, like, what are you going to do with those clothes? I bet you they gave them to, like, Mary and Elizabeth and were like, here's your hand-me-downs. Probably Elizabeth, like, because she was probably like, the same size as Catherine because Elizabeth was, like, tall. She gets six dresses. Those are her clothes, six dresses. Honestly, I only wear six outfits on rotation, but for her, that was probably really trash because, like, she got all this wealth and now they're taking it all away from her again. Fun. So she thinks that since she's at Sion Abbey, she's going to be kind of left alone. She's been taken away from court. She's just kind of chilling in the countryside. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen for her because her servants keep talking. The dam has been opened and they are just spilling everything. So the counselors keep coming to talk to her, like, what's going on? Your servant said you're doing this. Your servant said you were doing that. And so kind of like Lady Rochford, but to a lesser extent, this steady thump of, like, what's going on, Catherine? What's happening? She kind of collapses mentally, which is another reason that she is my kindred spirit.
Poor baby.
Kindred spirits. Oh, literally no one listening to this is going to get that reference.
No one at all. I doubt it.
I doubt it. If you get that reference, tell us.
You're so cool if you get that reference.
Are you though?
No. You're really not.
De Marillac, the French ambassador, wrote that he heard that she thought that after her free confession, so she like gives up, she's like, here's what's going on, like we learned about that in our last episode, that she was like, oh, they're not gonna talk to me anymore, they found out what happened, but no, they continue to do it. So she refuses to drink or eat and weeps and cries like a mad woman, so that they must take away things by which she might hasten her death. So they're concerned that she's going to commit suicide, so they take away things that she could do that with. So, like, I guess if she had, like, a knife lying around, that knife is not staying anywhere near her. Smart, but she's not doing so hot, which is completely fair, because, like, 2 weeks ago, she was living life.
Yeah.
And now,
poor girl.
On the 22nd of November, she is stripped of her royal title.
Poor girl.
So she's no longer allowed to be called queen. Only allowed to be called Catherine Howard. She does not get the same fun deal as Anne of Cleves, where she became Henry's sister. She's just Catherine Howard. That's not fun. So now everyone in England and Europe, I'm assuming, but to a lesser extent, is like, so the only thing that it looks that's left for her to happen is the scaffold. They're like, there's nothing else that's going to happen. Her confessions have not convinced anyone. No one believes that she hasn't done anything. The government is assumed to be pressing ahead with a charge of adultery, either in deed or in intent, with Thomas Culpepper, and then if they can find the proof that they're searching for, with Francis Derham as well. And then it doesn't help that her reputation has also been completely torn asunder by everyone living at court. So they have a lot of not as falsified evidence as it was with Anne Boleyn. So they're really like, they're going to double down with what they have, is what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Not very fun. So the information coming out of Sion is telling us that Catherine's appetite has completely vanished at this point. Her moods are volatile, which we've seen before. Like, remember when she was really stressed out and she'd, like, snap at her maids and kind of be rude?
Mm-hmm.
She's like that, but, like, times 100 because there's, like, it's life or death now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's often hysterical.
Fair.
Which, like, I feel that. That is what I think I would be doing in that exact same situation. So, unfortunately, they, you know, try Thomas Culpepper and Francis Dearham. They have a trial. They both plead not guilty, which is an interesting choice, but I guess go ahead. So the Queen's deposition, which claims that she was coerced into sexual relations with Dearham, that she did not have any sexual relations with Culpepper whatsoever. So obviously he didn't coerce her if they didn't do anything, is what she's saying. Because, like, it would be worse if she had had sex with Thomas Culpepper since she was married to Henry at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Dearham, maybe if she had slept with Culpepper, she's thinking that admitting to Dearham is not going to be as big a deal. Because it's just like, oh, I didn't tell Henry that I slept with this man before I married him.
Mm-hmm.
So this gets read aloud to the court so that the jury, or I don't even know if they had a jury, but maybe just the judge, who knows. They can kind of figure it out, what's going on. This is like a victim impact statement, but like a deposition. Guys, I'm using my legal knowledge from my law class, but actually we haven't done civil cases yet because my teacher has been teaching us criminal law for like 3 months and we're a little sick of it. We have 2 days left and we still have to do civil law, so I'm assuming we're just not doing it. But anyways, they also they talk about the details that they found from the interrogations with her about her premarital romance with Dearham and the summer interactions with Culpepper. So they talk about all this. This is not fun because the allegation that Dearham had intended to resume his affair with the Queen after he joined her household is kind of what the problem is. Like, it's a problem that they had sex before marriage, but they're like, oh, Dearham had intent to commit adultery with the Queen,
mm-hmm.
which they can kill him for because it's 1541. This is given unfortunate credence by a joke that Catherine makes about Culpepper to Lady Rochford while they're on progress, where she apparently says that if Culpepper doesn't visit her that night, she could find another man behind a door who, in de Marillac's early modern French, was, it's weirdly spelt, de Marillac, I don't like this, in autre qui ne, what the hell is this spelling? Basically, someone who would cause less hassle. So she's like, a man who can, you know, he's not going to be annoying and he will make the best of things with me. Like, mm-hmm. babe, this is like an Anne thing, but like not as big because Anne just had a mouth on her. But she also teases Culpepper that she has a store of lovers waiting to replace him in York. Babe. So if you're like a good lawyer, those words can be twisted and magnified to be like, she's talking about Francis Dearham, even though it was literally a joke. But if you're a good lawyer, you're jumping on that joke.
Yeah.
Ugh. And then next to Francis Dearham, Culpepper is claiming that even though the Queen had pined for him, they hadn't ever slept together. But unfortunately, his admission before the council 2 weeks earlier that he had intended and meant to do ill was enough to damn him. He's going to die, guys. And these charges are made capital, which means that he can suffer the death penalty, which is capital punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Eek. So these indictments don't say that adultery has taken place, but they just play a safer game, focusing on Culpepper's admission of intent. So this is what the charge is. I'm going to read it. It's old-fashioned writing. It's kind of nasty to read, but on the 29th of August, Henry VIII at Pomfret and at other times before and after, I think they call her Henry VIII in it, but whatever. Queen Catherine has at Pomfret and at other times and places before and after with Thomas Culpepper, late of London, one of the gentlemen of the King's Privy Chamber, falsely and traitorously held illicit meeting and conference to incite the said Culpepper to have carnal intercourse with her and insinuated to him that she loved him above the king and all others. Similarly, the said Culpepper incited the queen. No, not good, guys. So this is just like when Anne's lovers, quote unquote, were convicted before she was tried. Basically, there's nothing else Catherine's really going to be able to do. But after this jury retires, they come back and their verdict is that enough evidence has been produced to justify the death sentence for Culpepper and Dearham. So because it's 1541, you can't say that the law is unjust. Dearham and Culpepper changed their pleas to acknowledge that they've been found guilty. So now they're pleading guilty. And since neither of them are aristocrats, they don't have a legal precedent for any other kind of death than hanging, drawing, and quartering, which is what they received.
Ooh.
Not good. They're going to get hung, drawn, and quartered, guys. And something really nasty, we apparently, when this sentence was handed down, Norfolk laughed. And even his friends were like, bro, that is not cool.
Jeez.
Like, this man is really out here. Guys, if you listen to Queen's podcast, you should join their Patreon because Katie did an episode about how he sucks.
And we should all support that.
Yeah, I think that that is something that we should all be supporting. So basically, Dearham and Culpepper are trapped. They're legally done, but what they've planned to do. But Dearham is also guilty of withholding knowledge of Catherine's treasonous conduct because he hadn't told the government that they had been pre-contracted to be married, which would have made her unsuitable to be queen at the time of her marriage. Like, ugh. So this probably means that he did not confess, as Culpepper did, to a plan to become Catherine's lover. He probably was like, fine, I submit. I did not tell the Privy Council that Catherine was not a virgin when she got married to Henry. So this leaves him in a legal gray area because it's also illegal to slander the queen consort. Like, bro, that's kind of what he's thinking. You can't, like, if he goes to Henry, he's like, yeah, I slept with your wife. Henry might be like, screw you, I'm killing you because that didn't happen. Especially at the beginning of when he got married to Catherine because he was, like, obsessed with her. So I kind of feel bad for Dearham. Like, I don't like him. He's kind of a horrible person. But, like, what was he supposed to do? Like, just die?
What was he supposed to do, you know?
Like, this man is out here. Henry VIII is out here, like, killing anybody who looks at him wrong. And he's like, you should have told me that you slept with my wife before I slept with her. Like, what? But
what? Just a little.
But speaking of our man named Henry, de Marillac hears that Henry has changed his love for the queen into hatred. Woo! The counselors, these poor men, are just trying to, like, advance in life, and they're getting yelled at by him. So Henry and Catherine both have a similar reaction when they're in a stressful situation. They turn on everyone else and act like rude people.
As they do.
Except Henry's a bit more scary as a rude person because he's the king. And also, I feel like Catherine was not a very big person. Like, I think she was a pretty tiny lady. Henry's like a massive man. So he's like, his counselors are bearing the brunt of his upsetness. And he's grappling with the realization that his wife had preferred another man to him. I would say this also is when Henry VIII realizes, holy hell, I am old. He's like, I am an old man now. My young wife wanted a young man over me because I'm old. Because he was really thinking when he married Catherine that they were on the same level. They were not.
No.
There was like 30 years difference between them there. He could have had she could have been his grandchild. Because back then you got married at like 12 years old if you were a royalty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but the nice, good is that Henry, when Anne gets in prison, Henry has nighttime river banquets and pens plays about it, apparently cheery plays, and he shows them to the Bishop of Carlisle. So he's not writing any plays about how Catherine is going to die, which is good. Yeah. But I'm so concerned about the fact that he wrote a play about his wife. Like, what? Sir. Anyways, but this time he's like absolutely certain that Catherine has deceived him. And in 1536, as we've kind of talked about, Henry probably kind of knew what was going on because he was way too happy. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like, this man made a whole church 3 years earlier to marry this woman And then 3 years later, he was like, oh my gosh, let's have a party. My wife is dying. But in 1541, he's like, Catherine has deceived me, which she has done so more than Anne. I don't think she's done what they think that she's done. But whatever. Henry is like very, very upset, which I get for this circumstance. I don't like him, but I feel bad.
When is he not upset?
But he's like so upset that at one point all his friends are fearing for his sanity. Like they think he's just gonna like go insane, basically, because his wife has quote unquote cheated on him. But he does it all the time. But apparently, one time, he just kind of was sitting at the council table, and then all of a sudden, he, like, jumped up, and he was like, I need my horses ready. He didn't tell anyone where he was going. He's just like, bye, guys. Need my horses. Like, sir. And he also, one time, asks for a sword so that he can kill Catherine himself. Yeah. And he says that he's going to have her tortured to death to ensure that she feels as much pain in her demise as she had delight in her lust. Broski. I think this is like,
bro,
this man would have been such a good frat boy if he was now.
Oh my god. Can you imagine?
He literally would have been. He would have been running the frat life. The Greek life would have loved Henry. Anyways, he is like still like very involved in this case. Like you can see his handwriting or his like phrases throughout the paperwork. Like people have written things like, this is his majesty's opinion. There's instructions to wait until his pleasure is further known. So like he very much goes through and he's very involved in this. I'm gonna say that this is probably him making sure that it's true. Because I think like he was like, I don't know if that's true at first. Remember, he's like, you're lying, you're a liar. He also finds old legal cases to convince the judges the truth place. Like, this man, what has he not done? He dabbles in like literally everything. Now he's obsessed with the law too. Remember when he thought he was like a theologist and he was obsessed with the Bible?
Oh yeah.
He's just really into like, I feel like I would do that too, though, if I was, like, queen, because I would be bored all the time, especially now, because she doesn't, like, do anything. Sorry, British people, if you like her. But, like, she is the head of a constitutional monarchy. But anyways, like, you're just kind of trapped in one job for your entire life. I feel like I would get bored and pull a Barbie and, like, do all these different jobs.
Pull a Barbie.
But Eustace Chapuis is not feeling this. He is like, this man, I swear to God, we love Chapuis after 1536. Go off, king.
Go off.
So he writes a letter, and this is what he says. This is in December. This is to quote Chapuis. It's obviously translated. He wrote it in Spanish. But he says, the king has wonderfully seen his wife, and that he has shown greater than at the false loss or divorce of his preceding wives. In fact, I should say that this king's case resembles very much that of the woman who cried more bitterly at the loss of her 10th husband than she cried at the death of all the other 9 put together, though all of them had been equally worthy people and good husbands to her, the reason being that she had never buried one of them without being sure of the next, but that after the 10th, no other one, hence her submissions. Such is the case with the king. Does not seem to have any planned or female friend to fall back upon. He's basically like, this man is only upset because he doesn't have another wife lined up.
Well, damn.
That's true. Like, I feel like we can just confirm that right there. Because when Catherine of Aragon, like, when he was like, uh-oh, Catherine and I shouldn't be married, he had Anne ready. When he was killing Anne, he had Jane ready. When he was getting rid of Anne of Cleves, Catherine was ready. This time he does not have Catherine Parr waiting in the wings. She is not, he's not even like thinking about her right now. So he's like, what am I going to do? My life is terrible. It's not. You're fine. You're literally fine.
Like he didn't know what he was going to do next.
No, he was like,
just like
upset. He's freaking out. He didn't have a lady friend. I'm sure he had like mistresses that were hanging out, but he didn't have anyone that he wanted to marry. So I think that Chapuis deserves an award for that burn. go Chapuis. But let's go back to Catherine now, guys. She gets a delegation at Sion who want to know more specifically why she had allowed Francis back into her service. Because even though Francis has already been condemned to death, now they're trying to figure out if they can incriminate her family. Which, like, yeah, but also, what? Anyways, the Dowager Duchess, Catherine's grandma, basically fakes ill. She goes to her bed and she's like, I am too sick to receive visitors. I can't be moved to be questioned. So she pulls a Karen and she goes, I can't go out. I'm sick. But unfortunately, they're like, you're not sick. So the counselors hear enough examples about her being like, you know, not maybe the best guard. And then also knowing about these relationships and not saying anything to Henry or whatever. So they go visit Norfolk House and they're like, oh my gosh, she's not nearly as ill as she's pretended. And then they tell her, the Lord Chancellor wants to question you. And immediately she's like, oh, my chest hurts. I have pains in my chest, guys. So apparently like, this performance riles and impresses her opponents. They describe her as old and testy and immovable. So they're like, this lady is not talking. Go off, Agnes. She's like, I'm just an old lady. I'm sick. Sorry, I can't. And then Catherine's sister-in-law, the Countess of Bridgewater, she does kind of the same thing as Ship. She does not fake sickness. She just also does not buckle. So she's like, all right. Like, I'm not fazed by you. So they've recently taken her maid and one of her husband's gentlemen to try and get more information. And so they ask her 26 questions about Catherine's upbringing. They ask her things like, did you ever hear about late night romps or picnics in the maiden's chamber? Did you ever see anything in Catherine's like mannerisms towards Dereham that might have indicated a romance? Stuff like that. So they want her to admit to the role that she played in persuading Catherine to take Dereham into her service. They wanted to say, like, you knew about a pre-contract before then, like before Henry and Catherine got married. And you helped your mom. You helped your mom smash the caskets at Norfolk House that had information in them. And she's like, nah, I'm not going to confess to anything. Sorry, guys. But unfortunately, the next day, 14 people get shipped to the tower. And these people are Dowager Duchess of Norfolk, Agnes, the Countess of Bridgewater, the lady we were just talking about, Lord William Howard and his wife, Catherine Tilney, Alice Restwold, Joan Bulmer, William Ashby, Anne Howard, the Dowager's former maid, Margaret Bennett, Lady Malin Tilney, Edward Waldegrave, and the original informant, Mary Hall. Even she gets put in. So spilling the tea on everybody else did not save her. These people are not going to be killed, I will just tell you, but they all are being put into the tower. But Catherine gets shipped off to Sion. Meanwhile, Anne of Cleves is living her best life at Richmond Palace. Fun. So this is the house that's closest to Hampton Court. So right now, Henry is doing something called the Hampton Court Chase. He is basically moving from house to house. He's pissed off. And so London is like a buzz with gossip that Anne is going to become queen again. One lady even gets put in prison because she suggests that Catherine's adultery was God's punishment on the king for divorcing Anne. Anne's biggest fan right there, number one fan. Shout out her. But Chapuis is like, I know Henry's personality. I've watched this man for like the last 20 years. He's insane. He's not going to reunite with someone that he's like discarded like he did Anne of Cleves. But he did agree with the emperor that they needed to find a means to prevent that, because if we remember, Cleves and Spain are not friends. They don't like each other, so obviously the emperor doesn't want Anne to become queen again. He'd rather it be a Spanish princess. So there's some gossip that breaks in London with the story that Anne has recently given birth to a bastard child. Yeah. That didn't happen. I can almost confirm, but people are thinking that it's Henry, so they're like, oh my gosh, Henry loves her. They're gonna get married again. No. and unfortunately, while Anne is living her best life with, you know, possibly a bastard child, but not true. They're gonna kill Dereham and Culpepper. But randomly, Thomas Culpepper is not going to be hung, drawn, and quartered. The king is like, you can be just beheaded. But Dereham asks him to be beheaded, and he's like, no, you're going to be hung, drawn, and quartered. Like, I don't really get what the difference is between them, but whatever. The warrants are signed on the 9th of December, and on the 10th of December, they are dead. So, rest in pieces. I don't know how I feel about either of you, but I am sorry that you got publicly executed, because that sounds like a terrible way to go.
Yeah.
I would be ridden with anxiety the entire day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Catherine and Lady Rochford are going to have to wait to find out what happens to them until Parliament reconvenes in January. They're just like, sorry, you can wait. Sorry, guys. But right now there's no more executions that have been scheduled, and the mood in London towards the Howards, like her family, has also shifted. People still are like criticizing Catherine because patriarchy. But it's also thought really, really mean to be so cruel to the Queen's family, for not discovering her former ill life. So they're like, why are you locking up her grandma though?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just kind of what they do. They're just kind of, they like to throw people in that tower. But she gets questioned, Catherine gets questioned on the 5th of December, and then she gets just kind of left there for a little while. There's no accounts of how she received the news of Thomas and Francis's deaths. We can assume that she was probably upset, because that would mean that she was like almost definitely going to die, and also she was, like, you know, friends with them at least for a little bit of her life. But yeah. she's distressed because her family is locked up in the tower. We know that. But the good thing is that her grandma and her sister-in-law, aunt, I don't know, are trying their best not to implicate Catherine. So whenever they're being questioned, they're not like saying, oh, well, it was Catherine's fault. Like, they could have kind of given each other the ability to be exonerated by like painting her kind of like a harlot who had hoodwinked them all and been like, oh yeah, I'm actually like really virtuous, guys. So that's nice, because her uncle Norfolk has completely washed his hands of her. That's nice.
So nice.
So she's hanging out in Sion. Her attendants, so her servants, hear from her. She's like, my end is going to be soon. I'm going to die on the scaffold. But then she also has prolonged spells of manic, basically, like, gaiety. She's very, like, she's manic, basically, because she's having insane mood swings, because Anne got put in the tower for, like, a week, and then she was dead. Catherine, this is, like, they are very much spreading this out. It is a long process, in comparison to the arrested on May 1st, dead by May 19th. Don't know which is better. They both just seem terrible. But Chapuis hears that Catherine has recovered her appetite, which is good, and her habit of command. She is tormenting her servants, because like when Anne was in the tower, these servants are not like her friends. They're people that are appointed to like watch over her and kind of report to what she's doing. Apparently, she is imperious, commanding, and more difficult to please than she ever was when living with the king. Nice. Oh, Catherine, sometimes you just need to be nice, but, like, I feel you, because when is she ever going to get a chance again to, like, boss people around? Never. Apparently, she is, everyone, like, she's kind of, like, hanging out at Sion. She's eating again. She's having a nice time. As nice a time as you can, but she's like, she's playing make-believe apparently, I don't know, in her brain, I guess. But Shipui hears from her servants that her only prayer is that the execution is secret and not in public. If we remember, our girl has some severe anxiety about messing up in front of people.
Yeah.
That's a problem that she struggles with. And I would probably feel the same way. You don't want to, like, if you care so much about pleasing people, you don't want them to all see you die. Yeah. Like, that would not be something that you would enjoy. Yeah. So Catherine has been condemned to death. Yay. So Catherine and Lady Rochford are found guilty of high treason. And yeah, they're just kind of dead. They're going to die. But this parliament gets summoned on the 23rd of November, which kind of lends credence to the view that a lot of people have that the parliament of 1542, which happens in January, so like I guess they maybe didn't get their full break that they normally do, that this parliament was initially fetched just to deal with Catherine, which is a very significant contrast to Anne Boleyn once again, because for her, parliament was dissolved a few weeks before she fell and they did not reinstate it. But with Catherine, the government was very determined that everything would be done openly. People would know what was going on to kind of spare the king the charge of unfairly executing a second wife. So a lot of people were upset with the lack of like evidence towards Anne. Like they did not like her. They were fine that she died, but they felt like it was like, you did this for what? Mm-hmm. Whereas with Catherine, they're trying to be open so that the people are like, oh yeah, there is evidence. Whore. basically, there was kind of, they didn't intend to defend her, but according to like accounts, there was kind of some discomfort at the trial. Like that was just kind of the general feeling. Everyone was like, ugh. So Catherine is hanging out at Sion and some people come to visit her. They are Archbishop Cranmer, Charles Brandon, Lord Southampton, and the Bishop of Westminster. And so they come to find Catherine and they tell her that the House of Lords thinks that it is just that she gets tried by her peers. So that means that it's going to be like noble people. So that's how Anne Boleyn was tried. That's how George Boleyn was tried. It's how the Duke of Buckingham was tried. They do that because they do. Like, one of the principles of the law is that you do have the right to be tried by a jury of your peers. And because it's 1542, they don't think that common people are your peers. Fun. I don't think common people are getting juries either. Like, I don't know. I do Canadian law, not British law, but whatever. Catherine makes another error, guys. Like, possibly. She's like, actually, I don't really want a trial. Why are you doing that? So people think that this is because she was so preoccupied with her pride and what other people thought of her. So she didn't want the shame of having like her private life and the details of it read out in court. She also might have thought that if she like kind of appealed to Henry's sense of mercy that she might escape. And so she confessed to her sinfulness, apparently. She insisted that she deserved death, but in declining the trial, she kind of throws herself at Henry's feet, and she's like, I'm just, like, so sad, and he's like, no, and he squishes her like a little bug with his foot. That's my imagery. So they prepare. Thanks, guys. I work really hard on it. An act of attainder is prepared against her in Parliament, which means that they can arrest her and, you know, kill her. A law is enacted that makes it a criminal offense for anyone to withhold information about a royal bride if they knew that she was not a virgin. This is a deeply unpopular law, and a lot of people think of it as tyranny. They're like, what the hell? Which is part of the reason that Catherine Parr was selected as Henry's next wife. He knew that she had already had two husbands. He knew that she had had, like, she had slept with them. Mm-hmm. So that was a big factor there. He was like, thanks. Unfortunately, the king's men serve Henry well. when they orchestrate this last stage of her downfall. They absolve him of all responsibility by casting it as a request from the peers of the realm. So the clause that specifies that Catherine's death can come into effect, like the death warrant can be served, is stamped with a rubber stamp instead of with Henry's signature. So in 1536, he had to sign Anne's death warrant. This time, it's just like a seal that like gets stamped on. He probably didn't even put the stamp on it himself. Mm-hmm. Which, I guess, kind of nice, but what? The Dowager Duchess and the Countess get condemned to perpetual imprisonment, and they are lost, like, they lose all their money, basically, all their worldly goods. And then on the 4th of February, Parliament makes another law to be convenient to Henry. It permits the execution of those who, after their confessions or convictions of treason, shall happen to fall mad or lunatic. So remember, before this, people that were mentally ill could not be executed because they're like, they can't appreciate what they've done. We don't kill people that are mentally ill, but Lady Rochford is mentally ill, so they're going to kill her because right. Henry is pissed off at her. Which, I don't like that because no. People who are mentally ill, it's literally part of the law now that you can, that can be part of your defense. Mm-hmm. But whatever. She's not going to be able to appreciate the consequences of her actions if she can't even, like, be mentally normal, I guess. I don't know what to call it. But
mentally stable?
Stable. She's not stable. I don't think this lady has ever been stable in her life. But anyways, we'll find that out. Everything that's necessary to grant the Act of Attainder's request that the Queen and Lady Rochford should suffer the pains of death is prepared and ready. But Henry's not sad no more, guys. He's living his best life once again. He's moved on. On the night of the 29th of January, guys, the 29th of January is, like, I'm pretty sure the day he died, but not right now. The day the act is passed in Parliament, he's having a little party, a grand supper, so to speak, and he's flirting with three different women. Sir. stick with one, maybe. That's not how he rolls. On the 7th of February, Sir John Gage arrives at Sion Abbey to dismiss Catherine's remaining servants. 3 days later, most of her servants that haven't already been, like, sent away, they leave, they go back home, and she is informed that boats have arrived to take her to the Tower. So she descends into a blind panic. So counselors have come to, like, escort her. And they're like, please be reasonable. Like, you have to go. And she is so terrified that the only thing she can do is just, like, struggle. Like, she can't walk. But if they grab her, she's, like, trying to pull away. And eventually they lose their patience because they have to get her there. And she's not being very accommodating, which, like, who would be? But whatever. And they manhandle her into the waiting barge. She is in a black velvet dress and a French hood. And, it's not a good time. She's put in a covered boat, which I guess is nice. No one can see that she's, like, that it's her that's being sent. Four women, the last of her servants, and four sailors are in her boat. And they go off. It's afternoon. But by the time they pass under London Bridge, where Thomas Culpepper and Francis Derham's heads are on display, hoping that the covered boat meant that she couldn't see that, that'd be a little gross. The sun has already set, so it's nighttime. And Southampton and Suffolk are waiting with Sir John Gage on the steps of the Tower. They greet her like she's a queen, which I guess is nice. And she's escorted to her apartments, which we don't know for sure. But they might have been the same rooms where Anne spent the last 2.5 weeks of her life. I feel like that'd be very off-putting as Catherine, but I guess, like, she's a former queen, but she's not queen anymore. Very confusing. Anyways, at Westminster, the MPs from the House of Commons are summoned to hear the Queen and Lady Rochford's sentences on Saturday, the 11th of February. They give their assent, and then Catherine and Jane pass beyond the chance of reprieve. So there is no longer a chance that Henry has a change of heart and is like, no, let's grant them a reprieve. I don't want to kill them. Mm-hmm. Sad. A clergyman called John White is sent to her rooms to take her last confession. So she kneels and she prays with him, and she reiterates what she's done. So it's not like Anne, where Anne is like, I didn't do anything. But Catherine says, this is what I've done. But she says that she took God and his angels to be her witnesses upon salvation of her soul, that she was guiltless of that act of defiling the sovereign's bed, which means God is watching. If I'm lying, I will be basically put in hell. But I did not sleep with Thomas Culpepper while I was married to Henry.
Yeah.
And then she makes a curious request, which they're not going to refuse. She asks if she can please see the block that she's going to be executed on. And we can kind of think about it. Her marriage.
This is the part that's sad, where she practices, isn't it?
Yeah, her marriage begins on the day when Cromwell's death is botched. She's queen when Lady Salisbury gets hacked apart on the scaffold. She doesn't want that to happen to her. So she explains to her jailers that she wants the opportunity to practice by way of experiment. And so she did so. She kept doing it over and over again. She just kept laying her neck down into, like, the curve in the scaffold, like the block that you put your head in. And then the axe obviously, like, goes on your neck. So at about 7 o'clock in the morning on February 12th, the privy councillors arrive to witness her execution. So her cousin does attend, Lord Surrey. He's not very happy. He's not like Norfolk. He's not like laughing. And the only counselors who don't come are the Duke of Suffolk. He's kind of sick. This man is old. And, you know, the fact that they sent him on a freezing cold river in the middle of February to fetch her on Friday maybe wasn't the best thing for this old man's health.
Mm-hmm.
But Henry doesn't think about that. And then Uncle Norfolk is also not there. Just a side note, he abandons her, Lady Rochford, who is still technically his niece by marriage. Also his brother, sister, sister-in-law, and ungracious stepmother, as he calls her, in a letter to the king in which he disavows all affection for them and basically is like, sorry, I hate them. They all suck. They're so bad for what they did to you. I didn't do any of that. Just stop. Like, literally shut up. So she gets sent out into the morning air, and she's led to a scaffold. Her hope that the execution would be private was not granted, although because they held it within the confines of the tower, she doesn't die in front of a crowd that's as large as Cromwell's. It's like Anne's. Anne's was, like, held maybe the same spot Catherine's was, and so, like, only, like, I think it was, like, 1,000 people when we talked about it. Only, like, not as many people can come watch. So, while Catherine is being executed, Henry is hanging out at the palace, overseeing preparations for Valentine's Day. Yuck. and for her last performance, she was note perfect, as she always was when she was in public. She talked about Christ, and she spoke about the redemption that he was going to give her because she believed. She talked to the crowd. She urged them to learn from her example. And she praised the justice of her sentence and the good government of the king because it's 1541. And like some people have said that she says, I die the wife of a king, but I would rather die the wife of Culpepper. That is not true. There was no last minute time where she was like, I actually love him. And she never admitted that she was guilty for the adultery that she was suspected of. So, good job, Catherine. Go off. And this man named Otwell Johnson wrote, I saw the Queen and the Lady Rochford suffer within the tower the day following, whose souls, I doubt not, be with God, for they made the most godly and Christian end that was ever heard of since the world's creation. And they uttered their lively faith with goodly words and steadfast countenances. I can never say that word. But basically, she did a good job at her execution, which is what she wanted to do. So, that's good for her. And then she was unfortunately executed by axe. She did not get a sword like Anne. She got an axe because Henry didn't care anymore, I guess. And once she's died, her body gets taken with Lady Rochford's, and it goes to the chapel of St. Peter ad Vincula, which is a few yards away. And that is where Anne and her brother are buried. So Jane Boleyn and Catherine Howard are buried next to Lady Salisbury, Thomas More, George Boleyn, and another Queen of England, Anne Boleyn. It would have been very nice if they had buried Jane and George together, but I don't think they marked their graves since we don't know where they are now. And so I don't think that happened. But at least they all kind of got to be together. And so they pray for them. The cannons get fired out over London. The few people that came left, and she's left there in her grave, and in all probability, she has not yet reached her 21st birthday. And that's where we leave her. Aww. Rest in peace to Catherine, because that's very sad. And also, 21 is not very old.
I feel so bad.
I have friends who are 24 and they don't feel old, so 21 is just like, whoa. Scary and sad, but... Let's talk about this lady. She she's had a lot of different reputations, I think, throughout her life. Interesting ones. Mm-hmm. For a very long time, she has been the one who cheated as well as Anne. But I think Anne got a revamping of her character kind of before Catherine did. Although people still don't really like Anne. Blame Catherine for what happened to her, which is kind of nasty because, like, yuck. But I do think that with things such as Six the Musical, she's getting a little revamping, because personally, Catherine Howard is the only character that they do, like, even kind of write to how they really were or what their actual story was in that show. So that's good, because she deserves it. And, basically her legacy is that she was executed. She didn't really get to do very much because she wasn't queen for very long, and she also didn't get to keep living. And also, teenagers don't generally have huge legacies when they die as teenagers.
Yeah.
Because, no offense to our fellow teenagers, but, like, we're kind of just figuring things out at this age, so how can you expect anyone to, like, do anything? Yeah, that's kind of her life, and it's very sad, and it's very depressing, and it makes me want to cry.
That's so sad. I feel so bad for her.
I know. Sorry to everybody that's listening that you had to hear that, because it's just very sad, but that's what happened, so history is not always happy. It's almost never happy.
It's true.
It's kind of just how it is. Can't wait to spend the rest of my life talking about it. Wow, that's really gonna help my mental illness.
Yeah, definitely not.
It's fine. So thank you to everybody for listening to this episode. You made it all the way to the end. You get a prize. You don't, actually, because we don't really have the money to give you a prize. We're kind of broke. Although both of us have jobs now, so we're less broke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a paycheck the other day. Oh, my God.
Oh, I hated my first paycheck because I thought I was going to get more than I did. But that's fine. Now I get more than that, because that was when I made student minimum wage, which was $13. And now it's $16.50 at the old Blue Mountain.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
To make it a competitive place to work.
I don't even know.
But then they do things like, actually, I can't trash them on here, because what if someone from Blue Mountain listens to this? I don't want to get fired. But I do love Blue Mountain's camp. You have a very nice camp. I was never allowed to attend, but I like working there. But anyways, peoples, thank you for listening. I don't even know what to say, because I'm just kind of still stunned from what happened.
I know what to say. You know what you should all do?
What?
This is my thing for the day.
Okay.
Okay. You should all go finish the homework you haven't finished yet, because
that's for
I'm
Grace.
Gonna go do that.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. You should do it too. I'm gonna go watch Dickinson. That's my homework. That's not a lie, everybody. That's actually my homework. I finished my essay today in 2 hours. It's on performance enhancing drugs. Don't do them, kids. Live, laugh, love.
I'm gonna do my whole finish my writer's craft project. Oh my god.
Ew, yeah. That's gonna be a lot of writing.
Yeah.
Well, at least you do your work, because I have friends who are 2 months behind their work and are now trying to catch up on everything. That just sounds really hard.
Yeah, I sympathize.
Not a fun time, everybody. If you're out of school, I want to be you. And don't even give me but you're like a teenager, you're like loving your life, you're living your best life. No, there's COVID. I can't do anything. All of my extracurricular activities that made school something other than just work have been taken away. So
yay,
I can still work though. That brings joy to my life.
Does it?
No. Camp brought joy to my life, but working in the front desk does not bring joy to my life, except for when I meet nice millennial women that compliment me.
I love the millennial women.
Yeah, except for when they're mean, but most of the time they're really, really nice, and I appreciate that. Well, millennial women, I know there are millennial women that listen to this podcast. Appreciate you.
We love you. Yes.
We have like a very large millennial audience. Hi, millennials.
We love you.
We love you. We like you a lot more than some other people. But thanks for listening, everybody. You can send us your thoughts on an Anchor voice message. If you go on anchor.fm and you search up Not So Bloody Mary, I'm pretty sure we pop up. If we don't, well, sorry about it. But you can do that. You can go on Apple Podcasts and leave us a fancy rate and review, or just rate us. That's nice too, if it's nice. if it's nice, leave us a review. Listen to us everywhere else that you want. Literally do whatever. There was quite a few people that had us as their top podcast on their Spotify Wrap this year.
Whoa.
Shout out to you. Thanks a lot for that. That was kind of crazy. But yeah. Follow us on Instagram, NotSoBloodyMary_podcast. I don't ever post on there, but I will now because we've started to do things again. Follow us on TikTok, NotSoBloodyMary_podcast as well. We are gaining followers over there. People are liking my posts, guys. You should go over there because I try to post like at least once or twice a week, which is hard sometimes, but whatever. You can follow Grace's TikTok account at @thelovely_bookworm, even though Grace barely ever posts on.
Okay, you know what? I did post the other day.
You can scroll through and see Grace's face, because Grace isn't on our TikTok.
You're on my TikTok, like, once.
Yeah, one time. But if you follow Not So Bloody Mary, you'll see my face literally all the time. It's always there. Yeah, but then you can find Grace's face and be like, wow.
These are the people.
These are the people that are talking. I actually sometimes hate doing that because you picture them a certain way and then you're like, oh.
Yeah.
But I promise that it won't be a letdown, guys. I actually can't promise that. But please go follow our TikTok and, TikToks and our Instagram. And you could follow us on Twitter. I don't even remember what the handle is anymore, but I'm sure if you search it up, you can find us. And then someone other than just Queen's Podcast will be following us on Twitter. I just use Twitter to go on and stalk Ella Hunt's Twitter account.
Oh, I know you do.
Because it's funny. Yeah, so we will be coming at you live with another wonderful lady in some time. Not as long as the last gap, but we are finishing up a semester right now. So there's... Yeah. Lots of things to do, and then we're going to be starting a new semester, and I will have biology, which will ruin my life.
I've got law and, like,
fun.
Dynamics and earth and space science and play. Oh, my God. Okay.
I had a good semester, and it's over. It's fine. I am excited for world history and leadership, but my mom wants me to switch out of the class, so. That's something to talk about off the podcast. But I am excited for world history because I have a lot of friends on there.
That's good.
Yay.
Epic.
Okay, fam. Go finish your homework.
Finish your homework.
Go drink water.
Drink water.
make sure to wear a mask.
Wear a mask.
And wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
And social distance.
Social distance!
Woo! And also, go outside if you can. Right now it's like freezing cold and also dark outside, so I will not be going outside. I already went outside today. But
you know, go outside. When I go outside?
What?
I go outside to walk into my place of work and walk out of my place of work.
And go into the car.
Yeah.
Guys, I drove to Walmart today and I felt so fancy.
Wow.
Because I was driving all by myself and I was like, look, all you people, I'm old. I also drove to Dollarama and Winners. Best places. For Henry's birthday. It's Henry's birthday. I have to get him a birthday present.
Okay, fair.
Yeah. And I just think that that's scary that I can drive without anyone in there telling me what to do. I also drove to the bank today because I lost my bank card.
Oh my God.
No one needs to know that, but I got a new bank card. Jeez. I'm just a forgetful person. Anyways, if you are also finishing up your semester, good luck. We believe in you. I don't really know anything about when other schools other than Canadian schools that are not universities finish their semesters. I know that universities in Canada are not finishing the semester anytime soon, but everybody have fun in school if you're in school, or just like good luck. I believe in you. You'll do great. And then anything else you're doing, everyone that listens to this podcast is a winner because you are our friends and our friends are winners. They are, guys.
That's so cheesy.
I'm friends with a mini pop kid.
Oh my God.
Ex mini pop kid. We're too old to be mini pop kids
now.
Oh
my God.
That was a time in my life, but it will never come back. Woo!
Yay!
Have a great rest of your whatever, everybody. We love you very, very much, and we thank you for listening.
Or night, or whatever.
Or whatever. If it's like past 2 a.m. and you're listening to this, go to sleep. That's for me when I'm editing this tonight. Anyways, bye, everybody. We love you. Have a great rest of your day.
Bye.